Kelly.
This one?
Looks like it. Hello, and which input is this meant to be on? Does that make any difference?
I don't know.
How about now? Nothing now? No?
Do you want to try that one?
Okay. Any difference now? So the camera's working, so yeah, it's just front of house. Hmm?
Will it cut over or?
I don't know.
We're kind of getting into your talk time.
I'll switch it back. Okay, what about now? Yay, we have front of house.
Yeah.
Cool.
This one's not working now, but it's my great pleasure now to introduce our next speaker, John Oxer. You might know him from the book he's written, such as Sonic Impact. You might know him as the President of Learning from Australia, or you might be downloading his resume via the surgically implanted RFID tag. But John, you've got the voice.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, now, as software developers, most of what we do is really just about pushing bits around. Right? Everything happens inside the computer. You know, maybe change some pixels on the screen, you know, make some sounds, but it's generally pretty boring. Everything happens in a sort of virtual environment that doesn't have a lot of impact on the real world. So, what I'm here to do, by more of this, I'm here to free your mind. I'm here to show you how to use skills that you already have as software developers or as programmers, and use those in ways you haven't thought of before, like skills in bits and pixels and sound, and use those skills to reimagine reality. And don't think in terms of just what's inside the computer. But there is a serious side to this. This is not a warning that you see at a lot of software conferences. The stuff that you do can kill you once you start playing around with some of these things. So this is the big legal disclaimer. I accept no responsibility. You're going to have lots of crazy ideas after this, and I hope you go out and put some of them into practice. I take no responsibility for it. So, how do you get out of the physical box? There are a whole lot of options. There are a whole lot of ports on the back of a computer that you can talk to. There's a parallel port, RS-232, you know, regular serial ports. And there are a whole lot of others like Bluetooth that you can play with. But for the purposes of this particular talk, what we're going to do is look at the parallel port, which is good because it's a dumb port. It doesn't have anything to get in your way. It's really simple. There's no flow control, there's no comms protocol to worry about. Basically, it's just bits. All you have to do is worry about flipping bits, which we all know how to do. And if you look at an actual parallel port, the pins that come out of the parallel port are actually direct representations of bits in memory, which makes it really easy. So if you look across the top there, you see the blue pins D7 to D0, they're just representation of bits in a particular byte. So we have 3 bytes of memory that map directly to the parallel port. The other thing is the parallel port is bad because it's dumb, which means that the scripting language support for it is very poor. It can be very hard to talk to it sometimes. So what we're going to do is use a trivial little C helper, just a few lines, to talk directly to a port. So let's see how we can do this. Now, in here I have a very trivial little program. All it does is include some basic libraries. It defines a port address. In a moment ago I mentioned that the parallel port is basically just mapped to memory. Now hex 378 happens to be the address in memory on a typical system of the base, the first byte of a parallel port. So in this particular little thing, all we're doing is taking, we're setting some permissions on the parallel port. So doing IO perm port address and giving ourselves read privileges so we can read from the port. Then we're taking a value, we're basically saying in B, so read a byte in from the second byte of the parallel port and then display it. Really easy, very, very simple stuff. So what that gives us is all you have to do is compile that and oh, damn. Luckily, I have one already compiled because these things never work when you do live demos. So, we have LPT in, which we can call, and in this particular case, you need to run it with root privileges because otherwise you can't talk to the parallel port. And in this particular case, we've got a value which we've read. So 7F is the value, essentially, that the parallel port is currently reading in. Now, how can we get some information into it? It's actually really, really easy. All we have to do is wire, essentially, one resistor and a button to an input, and we can control the state of that byte in the port. So let's plug something in here, and I'll run it back up to the screen so you can see it. So 7F is the default. I'll press a button. And we've got a different value. So with a couple of lines of C and about 20 cents worth of electronics, we can now read values coming in on specific bits on that particular port. So that makes it really, really easy to read stuff coming in. And in a very similar way, what we can do is have a look at LPTOut.C. Does almost the same thing. Basically, this takes a value that we define and it pushes it out the parallel port. So it sets bits that you can then use to control things. So what we're doing is taking a value that we pass to it, setting write privileges to the port, and then pushing that byte back out the port. Very easy. Once again, you could type that up in about 2 minutes. So what we can then do is control outputs from it as well. So let's switch around here. And what I have here is an extremely simple circuit. It's basically just a couple of resistors, one transistor, and an LED for each of the bits on the port. So this will give us a visual representation of the data that we're pushing out to the port at the moment. Now what you'll notice is that it started up with a value. So the parallel port, basically you can't trust what value is coming out of it when you start a machine up. So what we'll do is push out a value of zero, which should turn it off. Cool. So we can now push values back out that port and control individual bits simply by whatever value we want to send to it. Once again, this is done with less than a dozen lines of C, which gives us a very nice little helper that we can then call using whatever scripting environment we might want to use. So let's look at some examples of things that you can actually do with this. I mean, what sort of real world stuff can you do? Now, what we'll do is we'll start by looking at my front gate. And most people might wonder, what's the front gate got to do with this? But this is actually pretty much the only front gate that I know of that's capable for gigabit Ethernet. So let's zoom in a little bit closer. To the left of the gate, you'll notice the letterbox, which looks just like a regular letterbox. And I have a slightly irregular letterbox here. But what's unusual about this particular one is that it happens to have a read switch behind it which detects the state of the flap on the box. Now, a read switch basically detects the presence or absence of a magnet, so it's like a proximity switch. And in here I have a lid with a read switch so that we can detect the state of that input. So what this means is that we can detect mail being posted into that letterbox. Now, if we go back to our little input device here, what I can do is connect that read switch across the back of one of these buttons so that opening the lid is equivalent to pressing a button. Not a very good engineer. Yeah, these things are always stressful when you've got an audience like this. Okay, so in theory we can now measure whether this is open or not. So if we read the value that's coming into it and you open it, the value changes. So we can detect the state of the letterbox in a very simple way. Once again, this is all done with just a couple of lines of code. There's really nothing much to this. So, what else can we do? This is a bit hard to see, but just on the left-hand side of the picture there is a little disc. That's actually another read switch that happens to be buried inside the gate, so we can detect the gate being opened in a similar way to the actual flap and the thing being opened. So someone can walk in and open the gate, and all of a sudden the computer knows there's someone there. Something that you can do in terms of output is control things like lights. So this is a light that's directly above the gate. Now, this is where things start to get interesting and possibly kind of dangerous. But there are some ways that you can protect yourself. This is a very cool little device. Basically, this is an RF remote control for an appliance. You can go down to Bunnings and buy one of these off the shelf. You can get them in just about any hardware store or electronics store. They come with a bunch of options for remotes, so you can get multi-channel remotes to control a lot of devices. You can get basically the equivalent of a switch or a push button. So what we can do is make use of these to isolate our control system from the end result so that we're not messing around with 240 volts and doing things that could cause us irreparable harm. So these are exactly how they come from the factory. There is nothing unusual about these at the moment. So let's see what we can do with them. Now, I have another little circuit right here, which is essentially the equivalent to the circuit board over here with the LEDs on it, but instead of having 8 LEDs as the output channel, it just has 2 relays. So what I can do is toggle the state of those 2 relays, which essentially means that I can do the equivalent of pressing buttons. Now, anything that has buttons, you can bypass those buttons and wire directly into it. So let's see how we go with that. So let's get this device open. In fact, to make this even more interesting, how about a volunteer from the audience to come down and help modify this? Any volunteers? Oh, they're down near the front. Okay. Paul? So basically this has 2 buttons. What we want to do is replicate the effect of pressing one of the buttons. So by putting a relay across the back of each button, we can do that very easily. So you just pull open, find out where the connections are, and Paul, if you would like to take your life in your hands, what I need you to do is solder that onto there. And that onto there. Yep, that's it. And then the other button. One onto there. And one onto there. Fantastic. Okay, so we should in theory. Thank you. Thanks, Paul. You've been a good helper. Yes. Now we shall test your work. So what we could do is, could I have another volunteer just for a second? Someone close down the front. Anyone? No one? Okay, could you just... I'll do it myself. Okay, could you just plug that into that power board down there? And then, see there's a fan lead just there, just plug that into the front of it. Fantastic. All right, so in theory what we can do now is flip those buttons by sending an output. So what we can do is, in our particular case, it's the first 2 bits of that byte. So if we send a value of 1, we'll flip the first bit. But we don't want to just turn the relay on and hold it on. So let's just do a nasty little hack here. And then, so basically we're going to pulse it for 300 milliseconds. And let's see if it actually works. Did we get anything? No. Damn. Ah, I know what I did. I forgot to plug in power for the relay. Let's see if it works now. Hey! Yeah, and then we can... That's all right, because basically what we did was simulated pressing the on button. To simulate pressing the off button, that's on the second relay, so we just toggle the second relay for a second, and we can turn it off. Now keep in mind that 5 minutes ago, this was exactly as it comes from the shop. And in the space of a couple of minutes, he could have typed up that code to do this. It's actually remarkably easy stuff. So let's look at some other things. Magnets, cool. This is a lock. A lot of you have probably seen magnetic door locks. They're stupidly expensive, but you can do a simpler approach. This thing is an electric striker plate. Once again, you can go and buy these at JCar or Dick Smith. I think it's about $35 or so. If you apply 12 volts to it, it will release. So all you do is, with your existing door lock, take off the striker plate, mount this in it, and you can feed 12 volts to it, and you can control the your door lock using your computer in a very, very simple way. Okay, a few of you can probably guess this. Who knows what this might... No, it's not very clear, is it? Who knows what this device might be? Yes. So this is an RFID reader. This particular one that's in the picture was built from a JCar kit, I think it was. But I have another one here, which is a lot more homebrew, like hand-wound coils, the whole bit. And it's got a USB to UART bridge in it so that I can talk to this via USB. Now, the interesting thing is that this particular UART identifies itself to the Linux kernel as any other serial port. So as far as the software environment is concerned, you're just talking to a serial device, which is really nice because it means you don't have to do a whole lot to talk to it. Now, the thing is, though, that in the scripting language environment, it can be quite hard to get to serial devices. There's something that's there's not generally much support for. I know that there is a Perl module, for example, that lets you talk directly to a serial port. And actually, a friend of mine a little while ago wrote a native serial port handler in PHP directly, which shows he's crazy. But it actually worked. It was a very, very cool little demo. But there is a little tool that you can use to help get around this problem. There's a thing called Theaternet. Now, if we have a look at what's on my computer, Theaternet is a little program which acts as an intermediary, and it exposes serial ports as network sockets. In this particular case, what you can see here on the configuration file is port 2000, I'm exposing dev TTY USB 0. You specify that you're talking to a device that's at 9600 bits per second and a couple of other things, and everything just works. So port 2000 on my laptop now, you can use my IP address, is actually exposed as that serial port, and we can telnet to it. Now, there's one thing that scripting languages are really, really good at, and that is socket connections. So let's have a look at a couple of examples. Once again, this is very, very trivial. All we're doing in PHP is fsoc open to the loopback address, and then sending it back out to the screen. So this is simply going to show us what is coming back from the serial port. So if we do, if we run this and look for an RFID tag, I happen to have one just here. Now, this particular one is designed for implantation in animals. So we'll take it out of the implanter. It's about the size of a grain of rice, so it's probably pretty hard to see unless you're right down the front. But if we now put this near the reader, we can read the code off it. So this is PHP directly reading a homemade RFID reader to read an implanted tag. And as you can see, that was very simple. A couple of lines of PHP. Now, what about other languages? We can do it in Perl. Now, this is the hard way to do it in Perl. I did this talk at OzCon a little while ago. I had Larry Wall sitting in the front row, and when he saw this, he said, you could do that in about two lines with a CPAN module. So, anyway, this is the nasty way to do it, but it works. Once again, we can read that RFID tag out of Perl. Or Python works just as well. Or just for the fun of it. Yeah. I'm not a Python programmer. I don't know how to fix things. Just for the fun of it, how about some Tickle? So So the point here is that you can do this out of just about any scripting language. You don't need to have a great deal of knowledge of how to talk to hardware directly. By using a few little helpers like this, an intermediate program, it basically takes what's in the realm of the hardware and exposes it into the realm of the software in a very, very simple way, which leaves open all sorts of interesting possibilities. Now, what else can we do? Curtains for lazy people. Now, everybody always asks me, so I'll explain right up front. That blue device that's taped on there, this is in my my son's bedroom, by the way. That's his cot. That's a night vision video camera. That we won't go there. What the interesting thing, though, is what's on the wall, which is a controller for electric curtains. Now, we were redoing his room a little while ago, and we got a quote for curtains being hung, and after we got over the heart attack of the price of the curtain, we thought, oh, since it's so much anyway, let's see how much it would be for electric curtain tracks. It's actually not that much more. So if you look at what's actually up behind the track, there is this barrel motor that drives a rod that goes down the middle of the track. And this means that we've got electric curtains. But if you look at that thing on the wall, it's got buttons. You know what you can do with buttons if you've got relays. What you can't see is that the back of that has been modified and there's a bit of Cat 5 running into it so that we can control it. price check on aisle 3. This is another thing that a lot of people have a concept that it's hard to talk to. This is a laser barcode scanner. The thing about laser barcode scanners is they emulate keyboards. When you buy a barcode scanner, you basically plug it into your keyboard port or USB and it pretends to be key press events, which once again makes it dead easy to talk to from any scripting language. All you have to do is accept user input, which means that you can do things like have a home stock management system with a web interface. Some people do that. I don't know why. Watering for lazy people. Now, this is really what got me started on all of this. Now, we have a bit of an issue with water, as you know, at the moment. And getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning when we're allowed to water is not all that much fun. But the thing is, if you go down to Bunnings and you look at the computerized watering systems, you've got a couple of options. You can buy a computerized water controller for like $300. And then you've got to buy all the bits that go onto it, solenoids and all of those sorts of things. And it rapidly adds up. And the thing is, it's not very flexible. It's a closed black box system that does exactly what the manufacturer designed it to do and nothing else. The alternative is that you get a $20 electric timer tap, like this one, open it up, bypass the control switch, and as you can see on the bottom, there's a little yellow connector there, which heads off and terminates at the far end somewhere in a rack in my house. So, a web interface for watering system. And once again, you can control it out of a cron job or whatever you want to do. PHP Phone Home. This really exemplifies what I'm trying to demonstrate here, which is that you need to start thinking about the world as a big Lego set. Don't think of things in isolation. Think of objects and the ways that you can link them together in ways that hasn't been done before. Now, in this particular case, this is a mobile phone connected to a computer back in Melbourne. On that computer, I'm running a program called Noki. How many people have heard of Noki? Yeah, most of you. Fantastic. For those of you that haven't, basically, it's a link between your computer and a mobile phone. And it sits there running backwards and forwards between the two, synchronizing the inbox and the outbox on the phone and some data store on your computer, which could be text files, can be a MySQL database, can be Postgres or whatever you want it to be. So what that means is that to talk to your phone and send and receive SMSs is as simple as talking to a database. Now, we all know how to do that. That's really easy. So how about we extend this a little bit? What we can do is, let's have a look at the output from read one. This is a very simple little script. Basically, it's just in a loop and it's reading the input value coming off the parallel port. I think I better plug that back in, though. I'm not going to make any sense out of this. So what I have here, once again, is the input that's coming from the letterbox. So you read that? So if I open the letterbox, the value changes. What we can do is set it up so that instead of simply outputting the value, if we get any change, we're going to connect to a remote machine and run a script. Now this is a bit of a dodgy way around it because I don't have direct access to the MySQL database, but what we're going to do, okay, so any second now, we'll be on the machine back in Melbourne. Now one of the rules of presentations, of course, is there's a sign on the door that says, please turn off your mobile phone. So who wants to volunteer to turn on their mobile phone? Someone that's got a really big ring and is willing to give me their phone number. Okay, we've got a volunteer down here. Cool. Just 1 second. Okay. So 04 11 11 76. You've got a lot of ones in there. It's almost a binary phone number. I would love to have a binary phone number. Okay, so we now have a script on that machine back in Melbourne, which when we trigger it, is going to do an insert into a MySQL database. So let's fire up our... I'm on the wrong machine. I'm back in Melbourne. So let's fire this one up, and it's looping around. And so someone comes along and sends me a letter, and something happens. Oh, I don't think it died. Oh, value is 127. That is not going to work. Let's try that again. Take two. There have to be at least three things that go wrong when you're doing a talk like this. Okay, so once again, someone comes along, chucks mail in the letterbox, and something has happened. Oh, it's bombed out this time. So have you got volume turned up on your phone? And if this all works, you should get a message and you can tell us what it says. Yeah, do you have reception? Yay, it worked. Cool. So it said you have, ringtone was too quiet. Okay, so let's look at other things we can do. Well, the message that I'm trying to get across through all of this is don't treat objects as something that only does one thing, does what the manufacturer designed. What you need to do is look at the possibilities. Look at things as being not black boxes, but simply collections of parts and things that you can modify. So there are a few things that I really want you to take away from this session. Firstly, I want you to free your mind. Stop thinking about things as being just the way the world is. Start thinking about hardware as being malleable. We're used to modifying software and changing things around to make it do what we want it to do, but start thinking of hardware in that same way. And then you can use scripts as glue. You can link all of these things together in different ways to have events in one location trigger events somewhere else. So thanks for listening, and if anyone's got any questions, throw them up.
Right, Mr. Guest, that's a good question.
They're always good questions.
Hi there. What about people who haven't got parallel ports, like four old Mac users and so forth? What should they use instead for this kind of experimentation?
Yeah, well, there are a whole bunch of different options. What I've been showing, I mean, in reality, I don't actually use a parallel port for this stuff. I use other more sophisticated ways of doing it. The parallel port is a good example. It's a very simple way to get started, but it really doesn't take very much. You don't have to care about building complex buffer circuitry and things like that. You can treat it in a very naive way. If you were doing something like running on a Mac, you've got, on the older Macs, they've got RS-422 ports, I think it's RS-485, which you can use. USB devices that you can talk to. there are a number of modules that you can buy that provide parallel input and output ports. They're not specifically a parallel port, but it's a series of bits that you can read from and talk to, and then you can address through USB. There are some manufacturers around that make things specifically for that purpose. And there are also a whole bunch of little devices like gum sticks. How many people here have heard of gum sticks? Okay, cool. For those of you who haven't, basically it's a computer that's the size of a stick of chewing gum. And they have little modules that you can plug into them which have I.O. ports on them. So what you can, and they have network on them. So what you can do is have a little device that has direct I.O. pins that you can then talk to across the network. So if you have a number of these around your house, for example, you can talk. You can have a home network that allows you to talk to devices around the house. So that's the sort of approach that you could take that's a little bit more sophisticated than this. Yes. Oh, sorry, there's a question up here.
Just so you know, JCAR's got a number of kits which are USB, and they have drivers for Linux, and it's about $120-$130, and all the analog and digital stuff works a treat.
There's a question down here.
What about USB to parallel ports?
USB to, yeah, so the question was, what about USB to parallel port or USB to serial devices? I haven't tried USB to parallel port. I've played with some USB to serial devices and had patchy results. In this device here, the USB to UART bridge that I'm using in that technically is a, basically what it's doing is USB in one side, and it's got a TTL level, which is 5-volt serial connection coming out the other side. So essentially, this is based around a serial to USB converter. And this particular one is made by a guy in Melbourne who specifically supports Linux on it. So that's really good. But I've tried a couple of devices, and I just haven't been able to get them to work, you know, from no-name brand manufacturers and things. Yes?
With your external connected devices using Cat 5 and the like, are you doing anything to protect against lightning strike and that sort of thing?
The switch is doing that for me, in theory. Short answer is no, I'm not really. The cable runs that I'm using are pretty short. The most exposed devices would be things like, you know, stuff out in the garden. I've actually got several garden gates. I've got gigabit Ethernet and power to the gazebo in the backyard, and my daughter's cubby house has Ethernet. A while ago we were talking about, wouldn't it be cool to put an intercom out to the cubby house? And of course, about 3 seconds later it was VoIP.
Yes. So how much hardware have you broken so far?
Sorry?
How much hardware has this consumed?
How much have I broken?
Yeah.
A little bit. A lot less than you'd expect. The thing is that one of the major points that I really want to make is that the best hardware to work with for this stuff is the simplest and the cheapest. And with that sprinkler system, you've got the option of the $20 electric timer tap, and if you kill that, well, $20, but you're not going to cry too much. Whereas if you blow up a $300 computerized, you know, control system, you'd think about that a little bit harder. So the trick is to look for simple, low-tech stuff, and then that's less of a problem. It's more robust, too, generally.
Any more questions? No?
For isolation. Okay, there are actually a couple of different things worth showing. There's a device which is plugged in down there. Basically, all it does is a little box, plug it into a PowerPoint, and then you plug a device into it. And it just acts as a switch, as a remote control switch. That's all it is. It's very simple. The other thing that I didn't show was my output device that I made is a couple of transistors, a couple of relays and things like that. But if you're really not comfortable with hardware and you just want to plug some stuff in and start playing with it, there are solutions for that as well. This is a little box that you can go and buy from JCAR for, once again, $30-something, I think it is. And it's an opto-isolated output device. So you plug that into your parallel port and it gives you 4 outputs that you can use to control relays. All you have to do is connect into it. All the hard work's done for you. So that's a really, really easy way to play with this without going to the trouble of actually soldering this stuff up yourself. Okay. Any other questions?
What was the price of that?
Okay, the price of that thing. That particular model came in, it comes in parts, so it's got, there are about four or five different transmitter options depending on whether you want multi-buttons or not. It's got different receivers. You can actually get receivers that are designed to be installed by an electrician inside, you know, hardwired into your wiring, and has, and they've got dimmer controls and things like that. So the prices on each of the individual bits varies from, you know, $20 to $40-ish dollars, depending on what you're doing. When I was over in the US for OzCon, I had a whole lot of this stuff to take over there. Actually, I was packing my suitcase before I went, and I was putting in all of these bits and pieces and modified remote controls and things like that. And I thought, US Customs, this is going to be interesting. So what I, and also 110 volts is the other problem. So I basically gambled on the fact that I was going to be able to buy something similar. So I went over there, went to the nearest hardware store, and they had it right there. So this stuff isn't hard to get. Yes, the question down here. Yeah. Yeah, low voltage stuff is really cool to play with. Yeah. Yeah, so the comment for those of you that couldn't hear was another good source for bits and pieces is anything that's solar powered essentially, or anything that's designed for use in you know, remote area situations where it's designed to run off 12 volts. It's very easy to connect that stuff up. Yeah, it'll make a big difference in this room.
Okay, I think we better wind it up there because the next talk's going to start in about 10 minutes. So please thank me in joining John for that great talk.
Thank you.